Welcome to the Lifecast. We hope that you find this ministry of New Life Assembly of God as an encouragement to you. You will hear messages and lessons in God's Word by our staff and special guests. Enjoy the podcast.
This morning, we're going to look in the gospel, the good news that John writes us in chapter 4. So, John chapter 4. If you want to follow along, you can. If you just want to listen and if you want to jot notes, you can. Or this message will be up on the website probably in a few days. And you can always push and play and fast forward and, you know, rewind and all that. But just hope that we find something this morning that can impact our lives and bring us to greater faith and faithfulness to the Lord. Gospel of John chapter 4, kind of a popular passage. You know, we hear from time to time the woman at the well, and I just want to look at this passage and maybe bring one or two things out that maybe would help us maybe understand better and apply something to our life. So in the Gospel of John chapter 4, verse 1, it says, "Now when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples did that, he left Judea and departed again for Galilee. And he had to pass through Samaria." There's a reason that he had to pass through Samaria. There's a main road there that goes from Jerusalem to Galilee, and it was just the best way to travel from that particular place to another. And that was kind of a main thoroughfare right there through Samaria, and we'll learn a little bit about that as we go on this morning. So we came to a town there in Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. Now, in this context, as they're looking at the sixth hour, that would bring them to round about 12 noon. Sun's high, heats up, and a woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to Jesus, this is really important, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman, and I am from Samaria?" For Jews had no dealings with Samaritans. I want to pause here. I want to give us, the history is just really important, and if history is boring to you, you can doze off here and we'll wake you up later. But history is really important in this, in most contexts. But in this context, we have to really understand what this lady is saying when she says, "How is it that you, a Jew, are talking to me, a Samaritan?" The history here goes way back generations. In fact, it goes, where we'll jump in history to kind of give context is probably around the 8th century before Christ. It's around 720 B.C., somewhere in there. Kind of an era where they might call it the time of the kings, okay? And what happened here is they were coming to a time where there was a separation in God's people. There were 10 tribes, or there's 12 together, but 10 became part of the northern kingdom, and there were two, Benjamin and Judah, that became part of the southern kingdom. And the southern kingdom, they were very orthodox. They paid a lot of attention to worshiping Yahweh, to obeying God's laws and commands. They were very attentive. They were very orthodox. The other 10 tribes that became the northern kingdom, they began to slip in their worship of Yahweh. They became unorthodox in the context that they didn't pay attention to the laws. If you want to put it kind of in our terms, they were kind of backsliding from the ways of God that they knew, and the worship of Him, and how it was supposed to happen, and being conscientious in their life and how they live. And so it began this decline. Now, what happened in this separation, if you were to look probably in 1 Kings chapter 16, King Omri, he purchased a hill, okay? And on this very large hill, he built a city that we know as, in Bible times, as Samaria. And so he built this city, and what happened that the Samaritans, see, initially, they were those 10 tribes, so they were Jewish. I mean, the 12 tribes, they were a brotherhood. They were, you know, brother and sister in God, in Yahweh, in faith, and there came this separation. And so the king of Omri built this city, Samaria, and it became the capital city. And it was, you had to pass through there. It was kind of the only main drag to get from Jerusalem to Galilee. And this is where Jesus is walking through. We catch him here in the Gospel of John chapter 4. And he meets this woman from Samaria. Now, to further the history between Jews and Samaritans, not only did the two tribes of Judah become very orthodox, they saw that the other 10 tribes, the northern kingdom, that their decline in observing Yahweh. And in this, the Samaritan area, there, because it was a large city, it also attracted a lot of people coming and going, and some would stay. And now the Samaritans, they started to intermingle with other cultures. And then they started to intermarry, which was unlawful because they were idol worshipers, many of them. And so now there was this blending of culture and different convictions that came to Samaria. And the Orthodox Jews of Judah, they looked at what used to be their brothers and sisters in faith, they looked at them as now they are rebellious, they are a mixed breed, they are no longer pure, they have fallen away from God, they're traitors, they're unorthodox, and so now there came this greater separation in conviction and life and lifestyle, and there was an oppression that took place between these two groups. As time went on, the Assyrians came, and they came and they conquered Samaria. And so what happened is they took most of the Jews and put them in exile, moved them out. They went to exile. They didn't remove all the Jews, but most of them. They left some. They left a lot of farmers because they were working the land and making food, and well, you know. We don't want to have to do that, so we'll let them stay and make food, and they can provide for this community and this city and this area. And so these other Jews were exiled. Then as time rolled along, King Cyrus came along. Well, I should stop here. Before he came along, during this time where they had the exile, other people groups moved in large numbers, people from Syria, people from Mesopotamia, and with them they brought all their idol worship. And the Jews that were left, the Samaritans that were left, they began to marry and intermarry, and those of other faith. And so Samaria just continued this spiritual and political decline. And over here we have Judah, who is still very orthodox, and they are honoring Yahweh and God's law. And so there became even a greater wedge. That wedge continues to drive deeper when King Cyrus takes place. He welcomes back all the exiled Jews from Samaria. And they come back, and they aren't real thrilled in what they find in Samaria either. Even though they themselves were unorthodox, there was even a greater decline. Well, as they moved back, There went ongoing intermingling and a greater spiritual decline. There were some from Samaria who were very interested in helping the Orthodox Jews rebuild the temple. You'll find this in Ezra and you'll find this in Nehemiah, that they were very interested in helping The Orthodox Jews rebuild the temple, and the Orthodox Jews rejected the help of the Samaritans. It drove a greater wedge. In fact, to the point, and you can read all the trouble that they went through in doing this in the book of Nehemiah, but it even got to the point where there was a temple in another location, and the Samaritans went there and profaned that temple by spreading dead bones in that temple. And so the wedge grew deeper, and through generations, it was intense, and they hated each other. You'll find this kind of spiritual and religious and political battles between groups and hatred even in this day in different parts of the world. All the way from the inner cities like L.A. with gangs and hatred towards one another that goes back. You can go to Ireland and see the intense persecution and bias between Catholics and Protestants. And you can go to different places around the world and you will find this same trouble. Well, this was for generations, and now you have Jesus, Jewish, show up sitting at a well at high noon, and here comes this woman who's a Samaritan, and he hops the fence. He breaks the fence. He becomes a gate, builds a bridge, and surprises her. And he speaks to her. One, the surprise is because she's a woman. Just because of cultural respect in that Bible and customs in time. But secondly, that she's Samaritan. They don't talk to each other. They can't stand each other. And here is Jesus, and he addresses a Samaritan and says, "Would you give me a drink?" We'll go back to John chapter 4 now that you have the history of the tension between these people groups. And Jesus answers her, "If you knew the gift of God who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would be asking him for a drink." The woman replies and says, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us this well. And he drank from it himself, as did his sons and livestock, and through all generations till now, we have come to this well." Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I give them will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become a spring of water welling up into eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty and have to keep coming back to this well." See, she's still hooked on this whole physical part. "I come here, I'm carrying this jar, I'm filling it with water, I take it back to where, I have to walk back to where I live. You know, this is difficult, this is hard work. Boy, if you can give me water and I don't have to keep coming back here to do this, sign me up." But she's still thinking on the physical terms. Where can I get this water? I don't want to have to come back here. If I can have water where I'm not going to thirst again, that would be good by me. She's still on this physical plane thinking that Jesus is talking about a physical well and physical water to put in a physical jar. "Give me this water," she says, "so I won't be thirsty and have to come here." And Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." Now, this is where it really gets interesting. Jesus says, "Go get your husband and bring him here." And the woman answers him and says, "I have no husband." And Jesus says to her this word of knowledge, this gift of knowledge about someone's life that he would have no way of knowing. He answers her and says, "You are right when you say you have no husband. For you have had five husbands, and the man you're now with is not your husband. What you have said, woman, is true, that you have no husband. The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem, that's the place where we must go to worship." Jesus said to her, see, she's already speaking from her bias. From being oppressed, growing up as a woman, as a Samaritan, talking to a Jew, she is already assuming that Jesus believes like every other Jew. That you say, we have to go to Jerusalem, we have to go over there, we have to go up to that temple to worship, when her forefathers say, hey, we can go up to this mountain here and we can worship. And she's assuming that Jesus believes like every other Jew. And so she brings up this conflict. You say this, but our forefathers say this. And Jesus surprises her with an answer. Because he doesn't speak from the prejudice or the bias or the bigotry. He says to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father in heaven. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews, which means Jesus, born a Jew, salvation comes through the Jews, Jesus being Jewish. That's what he's talking about. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, and the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know that the Messiah is coming, who is called the Christ. When he comes, he will tell us everything. Jesus says to her, I am he who you speak of. We're going to stop here for a moment. Several things going on. One, that Jesus is speaking to a woman in a public setting, and that she's Samaritan and he's Jewish. But the other interesting thing is that this is at noon. Sun is high. Heat's turned up. Why is this woman coming to the well at noon? Because you see, women gathered at the well with their jugs and their jars. They would come there early in the morning when it's still cool. Makes sense, right? Right? Say yes. This is the part where you wake up again. Yes, I remember being in a dusty, primitive place in India, and we would call it a city, but over there it's not a city, they call it a village. It's 300,000 people, and in this village, dusty roads, dirt roads, primitive housing, all of that, I looked out my window early in the morning, and there was a gathering of women, a large gathering of women with jars, jugs, and they stood around this public spigot, well. And they stood there and they just, you know, they visited. I could see they were talking with one another and they were getting water and waiting their turn, and then they would walk and make their journey back through the village to wherever they live. They would do this early in the morning. The middle of the day, there was nobody over at that well. They were not filling up jugs and hauling them at high noon. There's a reason that this woman was there at noon. Jesus says, go get your husband. She says, I don't have one. He says, you're right, you have five. And the man you're now with, well, he's not your husband. You see, the reason she was there at noon is she didn't want to continue to show up in the early morning and be gossiped about, ignored, pointed at, talked about, and have to face all of that because she was a woman who was doing something that was unlawful and being judged and condemned for it. I want you to consider this woman. Five husbands. Let's give her the benefit of the doubt here, okay? Let's say husband number one passed away. Okay? We'll give her a big benefit of the doubt here. Second husband passed away. Now, in their culture, in many places where if your husband dies and he has a brother, the brother, out of courtesy and respect for the family, would take her in as another one of his wives and, you know, therefore and so on. So in the first service, I told my wife, I said, you better pray nothing happens to me because you, my brother. And I'm not sure those two would, yeah. I'm not sure they, but, yeah, my parents here this morning, they're going, yeah, how would that work? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyhow. So let's give her the benefit of the doubt that second husband died. We'll even stretch this to, we'll give her a really great benefit of the doubt that her third husband passed away. And the reason we can, you know, kind of be that generous with her is my paternal grandfather, he got married three times. He had three wives, not all at once. But he married my biological grandmother. She passed away. He remarried. She passed away. Married a third. They continued to grow old. And, you know, health was waning. And, you know, that marriage ended in the passing away, in death. And so we'll be generous here with this woman at the well, who maybe had three husbands pass away. Fourth husband, to get to the fifth husband, there's likely somewhere here a divorce that takes place. I mean, five husbands. Likely a divorce somewhere. And I'm not guessing or reading into this. Let's just use some human reasoning here about a woman who comes at the well in the middle of the day because she doesn't want to be persecuted and put down constantly with other in front of other women. I mean, you have to remember that these women, they come early in the morning for water, but it's a gathering place. The women chit-chat. They talk. It's their social network. You know, some of you are in that coffee group that meets so many mornings a week at McDonald's. You don't just go there for the coffee. You go there to get the latest gossip. Ah! Huh? You go there to chit-chat and have friendship and get the scoop on so-and-so and who thinks what or what, you know, all of that. I know that goes on there because I walk through there. I talk with some of them. I don't stay, but I overhear stuff. About you? No, I'm kidding you. So, you know, it's not just about the coffee. It wasn't just about the water. That had to be done. But they stood around and they chit-chat and talk and, you know, I'm not passing great judgment and profiling all these women, but, you know how women are. Oh, come on. Some of you, you know, you women are very peculiar. I have conversation with a lot of you. And when no other women are around, you admit, women are so hard to get along with. And you is one. Anyhow, so they have their social network while they're getting water. This woman has had five husbands and is now living with a man who is not her husband. She's an outcast. She's persecuted. She's looked down upon. Why in the world would she want to show up every morning in front of that crowd who eat her alive? She'll come and endure the heat and the high sun because no one's at the well at noon, because no one comes to carry water in the heat of the day, but she will. She comes and Jesus is there. Chances are there's a divorce somewhere there. The fifth husband, there's a great chance that he divorced her, not in the context of providing her with a certificate of divorce, but threw her out on the street. You see, he could have multiple wives, and for some reason, he threw her out on the street, whether it was for adultery or whether it was for burning his bread. Any reason at all, he could throw her out, divorce her without a certificate of divorce. See, the certificate of divorce would free her to remarry. But if he throws her out in the context of divorce on the street, no more being welcomed under the roof and protection and provision of his home, he could throw her out on the street without a certificate of divorce. And now what is that woman supposed to do? I mean, she's not young anymore. She's endured now 5 husbands. And I say endure on purpose. Men. She's endured 5 husbands. She's not young anymore. What career is she going to have to provide for herself on the street? And she can't just go and marry somebody because legally she's not divorced. She's just been thrown out. And lawfully, a husband could do that. What is she supposed to do? Where is she supposed to go? How is she supposed to eat? How is she supposed to get out of the weather? She's destitute. The chance is the 5th husband didn't give her a certificate of divorce. She was just thrown out. And now, any relationship with any man that she has, because she cannot marry them, will be sinful. She'll be committing adultery, and so will they, or fornication. So here's this woman with an oppressed history. Politically oppressed, religiously oppressed, because she's a Samaritan. We go back in history. She's looked down upon. She's not Orthodox. She's not really a follower of Yahweh. She comes from a mixed breed now. She comes from idol worshipers. She's had 5 husbands, likely divorced and thrown on the street, and now is with a man who is not her husband. And Jesus knows all of this. She's at the point, let's consider this, because I've talked to a lot of people in the years of ministry who gave up hope for any life change or anything better for a lot less than what she appears to have gone through. So here she is, thirsty, dry, empty, because that's what life has left her. It's what relationships have left her. She's opposed, you know, and oppressed religiously, politically, and now personally in her personal life. At an age where maybe hope has left her that anything could ever change. And so, yeah, she is glad to be living as a wife, though she's not married, with a man. She's got a house, some place to live. She's going to eat. She's going to be somewhat provided for. It's not right. It's not lawful. But at this point of brokenness, anything that comes close to the scent of provision or some scent of love, I'll take. The man, I don't know if he's nice or not. He may know that she can't get married, and he may just see an opportunity to take advantage of her destitute state and provide little for her, though it's something, and just take advantage of her situation and her. See, this is the state of the woman. And Jesus, a Jew, talks to a Samaritan. Says, I've got water that will bring hope satisfied. Not hope deferred, not just some wild dream that you know will never take place. I can give you water that will satisfy your longings. A very interesting thing happens in this passage of John 4. Just then his disciples came back. They marveled that he was talking with a woman, but no one said anything. What do you seek, or why are you talking with her? Those questions were not raised. So the woman left her water jar. Oh, don't skip over that. This is the real thing for us right here. She left her water jar. Say it. She left her water jar. She left her water jar and went away into town and said to the people, now said to the people who judge her, persecute her, look down on her, don't want to associate with her because it would taint their reputation. She goes back to those people. And she says, come. She invites. Talk about forgiveness. She wants them to benefit. Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. And she poses this question, which is a great question for you here. And if you're here and you're not sure about God or sure about Jesus or Christianity, here's the question for you. She says, can this man be the Christ? She left the water jar. You remember, she was so focused on physical water being drawn and put in a physical jar. And when Jesus talked about the everlasting or life-giving water that they won't thirst again, she was still saying, where do you get this water from? I mean, you don't have a jug with you. You don't have a jar with you. You have nothing to draw water. Where do you get this water? She's still thinking in physical terms. And then the light went on after she had a conversation with Jesus. She began to understand about living water that comes through faith in Christ. Here's the symbolism. Here's the sign. Is she left her physical jar at the well. She came there for water. She came there to fill it. She argued with Jesus, debated with him about this water and going the water going in a jar. She bragged about the well that was come down from Jacob to her people. She's so fixated on the physical. And Jesus is speaking about a spiritual water. A water that changes a life here in this life and takes us home into eternity. See, the light goes on for her, and this is how we know. Is she left her physical jar at the well. And she realized the living water, that this is the Christ, that this is the Messiah, this is the one who we have hoped for and believed in that would come. And the living water, hope satisfied, that my oppressive background, my oppressive, broken, cyclical life can be washed away. You see, she discovered that the living water doesn't go in a clay jar. It goes in to this container. This jar. This pot, this temple of the Holy Ghost, as Paul writes, our body that we contain, we hold, that the living water he gives wells up as a spring of life within us, that streams of living water flow from within. You see, the light went on, all because of a conversation, an honest, genuine, truthful conversation with Jesus. I don't know your past. I don't know how oppressed you've been. I don't know what side of the tracks you grew up on. I mean, maybe your last name meant something somewhere. Maybe it was condemned or looked down upon, or somebody in your family tree did something and now it cast a shadow on you and you are judged for it. Maybe it was the color of your skin. Maybe it was your gender. Maybe it was your occupation or your father's occupation or your mother's. Somewhere along the line, you were maybe judged unjustly for something that you had no choice in. I didn't choose where I was born or who I was born to or where I was born and what city or what town or what house I grew up in. Those things I can't control. They weren't decisions. Maybe there's some things that you decided to do or respond like or instigate, and it brought judgment and oppression to you. And, well, You know, none of us are without guilt. But Jesus comes, and he's basically saying, I don't care what gender you are, and I don't care what people group you're from. I just care about you. And I care about your oppressed history and all your brokenness that your life has represented. When life is unfair, when life isn't turning out like you thought or hoped, and you got to the place where you don't even hope anymore, you don't even dream anymore, because it's just a disappointment, and the calendar goes by, and it feels like it's too late. And Jesus shows up to an older woman at a well. And says, I can give you hope that's satisfied. And that hope and peace for you isn't based upon circumstance. And that you don't have to continue to live under the oppression of others. That you can live as a free person. That they can oppress all they want, but it does not affect you. Because you have found favor in living water. And you discovered that you are the container that he pours into, that he gives living water to and pours into. That begins to change the whole life. See, don't complicate this. It's simple. Wherever your oppression or brokenness or your tainted, twisted history is, have an honest, wide open, nothing hidden, conversation with Jesus. It will change everything. It's a power and a life-giving spirit that doesn't just forgive us of the past, that we are now believers, but yet we walk under the influence of all that oppression and all the stuff that has gone on in our life and all the disappointment and all the broken relationships and all the mistrust. I'm a believer, I forgave, but I'm still on guard because of all this stuff that influences me. You see, when Jesus gives living water, it's not just the forgiveness of the past, it's that we are free from the past. That we don't have to live under the influence any longer of that history. I don't have to live under the influence of the oppressor's words or the condemning people. They may still do it, but living water is in me. And I'm not just forgiven, I'm free. I can actually live life. This is not living water just to get me forgiven and go to heaven and have no impact in this life. It has the powerful impact to be set free. Jesus offered conversation with a broken, destitute, hopeless woman. She was a product of her past, and through a conversation with Jesus, she became a product of hope satisfied. Would you stand with me, please, all over this room? I know my history. I don't know all of yours. I know snippets because you've shared with me some of you. But you know your history. And you know from your history what you still feel like you walk under. And I want to tell you that if you're not walking free and I'm not walking free, it's not because of Jesus' blood isn't powerful enough or the life-giving water in his spirit isn't enough. It's that I choose not to be filled with it. Because if you and I choose to be filled with it, there is no room for that. That woman left the empty jar that represented the burden of life, that represented the emptiness of this life, and discovered the fullness of living water inside of her. You see, that's the woman at the well. She's us. She's you. We're her. Running around trying to satisfy and grasp hope and make something happen and try to cover brokenness or work our way through it or just give up. One conversation with Jesus transformed her whole future, her whole life. The grief and guilt of five husbands and now living in adultery, all wiped away. Every mean word, every slap, every beating, the horrifying experience of being thrown out on the street with nothing and no place to go, in a time where she was a oppressed outcast of society and religion and politics. And Jesus came. Jesus came. Jesus showed up in my neighborhood. He showed up at my well. He showed up on my route. He showed up where I live. He showed up. And he broke every barrier, broke every chain. And I exchange an empty jar of this life for a full life in him.
Thanks for joining us on the LifeCast. It is a ministry of New Life Assembly of God in Sparta, Wisconsin. If you are ever in the area, we would enjoy the opportunity of meeting you. Until then, remember, God is for you, not against you.